Brad, you're getting your pipes looked at next week.
What? Don't talk about that in public. That's
what you don't want. Well, it's a medical thing. I know. It's like there's.
Look, HIPAA doesn't mean that I can't talk about your shit. It means that the hospital can't talk about your shit, Brad.
I guess that's true. What was it you said right before we started this?
I said,
if I get scoped, we can compare something. What was it?
We can compare our pipes, man.
Oh, man.
Look, a few years ago, I had some voice problems. I went to the UCSF Voice and Swallowing Clinic, which is fantastic. They're wonderful doctors, magic workers. And they helped me with my problems where I was losing my voice all the time. But phase one, as it often is, was going to the doctor and having them stick something inside you with a camera and a light on it.
Oh, boy.
And then they made me make a bunch of weird sounds and they watched my vocal cords.
Well, I guess I'm in luck because I have an appointment at the same clinic next Thursday.
Oh, man, you are in. Look, OK.
I don't think I've ever had an invasive camera experience before.
Well, hey, get ready, because the older you get, the more of them there are.
I was going to say this is at least easing me in, right?
Look, you have a lot of holes and they can put cameras in all of them, Brad.
Can we never use language like that again, ever?
I mean, look, on the nice side, if you think about it. Some of them aren't even holes. Some of them, it's just like the outside. It's the torus port. It's the center of the donut, if you know what I mean.
So are we talking ears here? What's going on?
No, the ears don't go all the way through, Brad.
That's true.
Yeah, there's only one hole.
Actually, that's not true. There is probably continuity all the way from one ear to the next, right? Through the throat.
There's eardrums. Like, the eardrums stop everything.
Yeah, I guess you're right. There's no air passing anywhere through there.
As far as I'm aware, there's only one passage that goes all the way through. It's a long journey. It's fraught with peril.
Oh, it's not. But they let you keep all your media, right? I think you've posted some of it in the Discord before, right? It looked like the Predator.
Yeah, I have posted my vocal cords in the Discord before. I think back then was before they did all of their digital sharing stuff. And she was like, I don't know how to give you a video of this, but why don't you just point your phone at the screen? Because like I watched this, I was like, I've got to have video of this. This is freaking awesome.
Are you saying I'm going to be able to sign into a web portal and download a video of my uvula?
Yeah. No, that would be on the top. This is they aim down.
Oh, okay.
So they put this. I'm going to tell you, it's not. This was actually of the cameras that they can jam in your holes. This was the least invasive one I've done.
I thought we covered this. Do not. Come on.
They put it in the back of your mouth. You very carefully trying not to trigger gag reflex.
Oh, good. That sounds like a gauntlet unto itself.
Look, she was very delicate. Her good hands. I was very, very pleased.
Okay.
They aim the camera down and they get to the point that they can get past like your soft palate and see your vocal cords, like the opening for your trachea, where your trachea snaps open and closes next to your esophagus. And then you make a bunch of weird sounds so you can see the cords in slow motion. And it's freaking cool, man. They like, well, okay, a fleshy, like fleshy, Giger-esque nightmare. It was like that part. There's weird stuff inside people.
Anything that close up is going to be.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, how often do you get to see your cords working in high speed and see the little ripples of the sounds being formed?
That sounds neat. I suppose it's something to look forward to. It'll be an experience. Did you have any visible damage? Did they recoil in horror and be like, oh God, what have you been talking about?
Nope. Like if you've ever watched, I think Pitch Perfect 2, they talk about nodes. I think what she was looking for in that instance was like nodes and like little growths on your cords.
Yeah. I think those require surgery, right?
Sometimes
like some singers get those.
Well, if you like everything I learned about this, I learned from Pitch Perfect 2, but if you get nodes, or Pitch Perfect 1, maybe. I can't remember. If you get nodes on your cords, you get surgery. You can change the tone of your voice.
Oh, no.
Yeah. If you sing like an angel, Brad, you can't get nodes cut off.
Not anymore. I can't. I don't sing at all. I don't do it. Like, much like you, I'm ending most days having difficulty talking at this point. It turns out.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. You talk every day professionally for like 15 years. It's.
So the good news is. At least in my case, they were able to help a lot. Like they went through and I talked to a speech therapist who taught me who basically listened to me talk and watched how I use my mouth and my like there's a lot of touching at the physical therapy, like a lot of neck touching, which is uncomfortable. But like
this whole thing just gets more and more personal. I don't know.
Look, it's worth it. I'm going to go and tell you 100% worth it.
Okay.
She told the speech therapist was like, okay, here's some things you're doing. Here's some exercises that you need to do for the next 2 weeks that will help you retrain yourself to not do this stuff and to at least be aware when you're doing the things that you're doing to hurt yourself. And then here are like some stretches and exercises and massages and stuff like that you can do to release the muscles that are like in my case, it was that I was doing like two or three things wrong. And those things wrong had a cascading series of like of side effects that were causing me a lot of uncomfort, discomfort and pain. And once I got rid of the three things that were causing the problems, then like retraining myself to not do them, I was much better almost immediately.
Stretches and exercises, are my vocal cords going to be doing like deadlifts and curls and look, tricep?
You're going to be rubbing up under your jaw like you've never rubbed before.
Are my vocal cords going to get swole?
Look, you're going to be so ripped, bro. So ripped. Never skip vocal cord day, Brad. Welcome to Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
I'm Brad. We're doing this early enough in the morning that I sound normal.
You sound great, man.
Yeah. It pitches up throughout the day.
Well, that's probably a response. Look, I'm not a vocal therapist. They're going to tell you a bunch of shit about how you talk, and you're going to feel very self-conscious about it. Like, you got to open your mind. Open your heart.
We had some family come by.
Family?
Family?
What?
Did
you watch Fast and the Furious 9?
Did you? What?
Family.
Is that a B?
Oh, yeah, there's a B. When Vin Diesel says family
in
Fast and the Furious movies, he says fambly.
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 Oh, I don't think any fambly came by.
Oh, okay.
I've never seen a Fast or a Furious.
What?
Let's not get into it. Anyway, all I was going to say is, you know, naturally, we had not seen these people in like a year and a half. They stopped by in that brief window where it seemed like if everyone's vaccinated, you're okay.
Yeah.
Which I think we are rapidly exiting.
We're leaving now. Yeah.
But anyway, this was 3-4 weeks ago or something. But they, one of them almost immediately asked, are you coming down to something? Are you okay? Are you under the weather? I was like, no, this is just how I sound late in the day. Like, it sounded like I was losing my voice because I was sick or something. Oh. Anyway, whatever. I don't need to belabor the point. I'm looking forward to getting scoped.
Yeah, get put those cameras in your holes, Brad.
God damn it.
You know what time it is.
Can we just convert some questions and answers, please?
We're a week late and we're an hour short. How do people send questions into us, Brad?
I don't know about you, but I want to issue a sincere thank you to our Discord community for all of the great questions. We got a ton of questions this month.
Like, I would say several hundred questions. And when I scroll through the list, they're all good.
Like, yeah, we copied, I don't even know how many into this doc that we're probably not even going to get through a third of the ones we put into this doc. And we only probably put like a 20th of the questions in this doc.
Yes.
Anyway, all I was going to say, yeah, we're mostly taking these questions on our Discord now.
Yeah. The one thing that I don't like about that is that it then is exclusive to patrons.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So. It's not. Well,
like, but
should I just say it? Should I just say it? We haven't been getting a lot of emails lately.
We have not been getting a lot of like, I feel like maybe email's dead, Brad.
I am more than happy to read questions from emails from anyone who listens to the show. We just haven't been getting a lot. So please, please feel free to email us. We will absolutely still take your questions at
techpod@content.town.
That's techpod@content.town.
God, the sultry tones this morning, Brad.
Yeah, please continue emailing if you would like, but
this Discord experiment, the void into which people type questions, it's working really well from where I sit.
Real talk, to do a question and answer episode, you need questions.
Yeah, we can't do questions without, we can't turn questions into answers without questions.
But if we're not getting a lot of questions in the email, we have got to take extraordinary measures.
There are more than a few thousand in here, actually. It is a ton.
Anyway, I just wanted to say thank you to everyone for asking all these questions, because it makes doing these episodes a lot easier when we have a ton of good questions.
A Money asked, can y'all do a hackathon? Man, that is a good idea.
What? I saw
it's way up there.
I saw that and I didn't know how to respond because like in what position am I to participate in a hackathon? I don't know how to hack.
We have organizational skills. We have people skills.
Oh, I guess you don't have to actually hack yourself to be part of a hackathon.
No.
Like we could just get other people together and inspire them to hack.
We could just say, hey, let's take like a Friday, Saturday and Sunday 1 month and let's do some projects.
Tech Pod Community Hackathon.
Like what if we were like, okay, we're going to go find some low traffic open source projects and go fix some bugs. That's a terrible idea because I'm sure we would fuck all kinds of stuff up. But like,
I admire your spirit though.
Yeah. Like what can we do at, like we could do a game jam. We could do a hackathon. We could help other people with their projects that need code. Like there's all sorts of things we could do. That last one's mostly for me, if I'm being honest.
That's a cool idea. We should back pocket that one.
Yeah. I'm going to put that one in the back pocket. Okay. Do you have a serious vetted question for us to go down here?
Yeah, let's get into the actual questions.
Put on your question answering hat, Brad.
All right. First question is from Glass Pup. Okay, I'm trying to do this. This is so hard to remember this. The first tip you gave me was don't talk without a full breath.
Breathe.
Preloaded.
I was told, the first thing she told me was I was breathing wrong.
You gotta preload a breath before you start talking. And I'm terrible. It's like every time talk, I'm like, I've got like maybe a third of my breath left in the tank. And
yeah. And you're just like, man, I can do this.
You just push through.
Yeah. It's like you're sitting and looking at a bomb and there's a red wire and a green wire. And you're like, I don't know which one to cut, but I got to get this question out. And I only have this much air left in my lungs.
I'm just going to push it.
Push it, diaphragm. Push it. Take it to the limit.
Apparently that's bad.
It's bad.
Okay. Why is ATX the standard form factor? 32 gigabytes of DDR4 is easily reached with only two dual rank DIMMs. NVENC is plenty for stream encoding. Or you have 12 and 16 core enthusiast CPUs. Dual GPUs are pretty much gone. You don't need a secondary PC to stream. So some people would beg to differ.
That's
on that one.
That's not true.
280 millimeter all-in-one water coolers fit in ITX builds, and most people only have one or two M.2 drives with maybe an extra SATA SSD. Just to clarify where he's going with this or where they are going with this. Like, these are all reasons that PCs can be small these days.
Yes. These are arguments for making itsy bitsy PCs.
So why is MATX or ITX not the standard form factor? Is it just momentum already built into the industry? Are capture cards still a thing? Do we just like the amount of glass available on an oversized ATX case? Interested to hear your thoughts. Like, yeah, he's basically saying like, hey, PCs can be extremely small and compact these days. So why the hell do we keep doing these big ass ATX cases when it's mostly empty space in there?
So, I mean, my computer, well, first off, USB capture cards suck universally. So if you need to cap, yeah, they're bad.
I've had some okay luck. I mean, it depends on your use case, I guess.
Okay, when I say suck, I mean, right now, if I want to stream a PS5 or a Switch game, I can have that up and running in like 2 minutes without having to do any like janking around with cables or anything. And every time I've tried to use a USB capture card, like you always have to unplug it and replug it, or there's some weirdness because USB is janky.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. But I've only used one USB capture device. It was a Magewell, if you're familiar with those.
Yeah, I remember them. Yeah.
Like, I've had worse luck with the Elgato internal capture card I've got now than I had with that Magewell before. But not, you know, that's anecdotal.
So, but also, if you want to have more than one or two capture devices, like if you're using multiple cameras, then you have to use cards because you'll saturate your USB bus really quickly. Yes.
Bus contention.
Yes.
Is a phrase I have become acquainted with.
So if you're doing a video mixer or a machine that works like a video mixer, like a standalone stream PC, then like either there are two or three capture cards in my stream PC at any given moment.
Jeez.
Well, because one does the camera and then one does the connection from the PC to the game PC the stream PC.
Okay. The perils of doing the early morning podcast.
Yeah, I mean, look, I didn't make coffee because I didn't want to wake up everybody in the house by running the grinder this morning.
You're starting to see capture card. We're getting off on a capture card tangent here, but you're starting to see cards with multiple discrete inputs.
Yeah, Avermedia makes one with two that's very reasonably priced, and Elgato has that forehead one.
Yes.
But still, you also can't really do an OBS machine that doesn't have a real GPU because they use the GPU for compositing.
Right.
So if you try to run that on integrated, you're going to have a bad time. So you need two slots for a at minimum for a streaming PC.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're talking a lot about streamer life here. The question is a lot more general, of course. But like I personally, speaking from my own experience, I think a lot of it is probably inertia and traditionalism. Like,
yeah,
like definitely in my mind, like, OK. Here's a good example. My last build, I got a micro ATX board as part of a bundle.
Okay.
Like it was such a good deal that I got the bundle, even though like I didn't want the board. Right. Like it was like, it's like, oh, this bundle is basically, it was a Newegg pricing error.
Oh yeah. It was a pricing error in your favor.
It was like, oh, this bundle is cheaper than just the CPU separately. I should just get this. But like an idiot, I turned right around and bought a full size ATX board because in my mind I was like, this doesn't have enough ports on it or enough PCIe slots. Turns out actually, you know what? In retrospect, that was a good idea because I am now currently using every PCI Express slot in this system.
That's the thing. Yeah.
But I didn't think that at the time. At the time, all I thought was like, my micro ATX is too small. There's not enough on this board. Like I need something, even though this perfectly functional board is sitting right in front of me, I'm going to buy a full ATX one because that's what a computer is. God damn it.
Well, and then the other thing is there's always stuff coming in the future that you can't predict. Like I used a wireless Vive kit for a long time and that used a YDI or whatever the Intel's high frequency wireless standard is. And that's a PCI Express card. Like without a slot, I couldn't have done that.
Sure.
So, I mean, the challenge now is that especially on the Intel side, the number of lanes in the CPU is not commensurate with the number of slots on the board. So sometimes you might as well just get here's the real answer. If ITX boards had two slots, they'd be fine.
Okay.
Right.
But
they only have one slot.
Okay.
Yeah.
That I didn't know. I've never seen one in person.
They're like the size of a book. They're very small. The other thing is those cases, my daughter's PC is an ITX case. Oh. They're a real pain in the ass to work in.
Yeah. I see the breakdowns of some of these builds people do. And like, I think they are like an amazing feat of Tetrising. Like the way that everything is just barely fit together and with like zero empty space is super cool on one level. But yeah, it sure does look like it would be a pain to deal with.
Like her case is so small that there's a little light in the top of the, like over the top where it goes. So you can see the motherboard. Cause like, there's not really even a place to get a flashlight in there. It's really, really snug.
I think conceptually, I think those builds are super cool. I don't know that they're for me, but there's like a whole little subculture just on our Discord. I know there are like subreddits out there as well. Like some people are just super into this stuff these days. And I think it's awesome that people are doing it. I just don't know that it fits my use case because like pre-planning and like keeping options open and extensibility are kind of the name of the game for me in PCs. Like I always want the option to do more in the future.
Yeah. Well, and for me, like a motherboard usually lasts quite a few years.
Yes.
So, I mean, if you asked me 5 years ago what I would be using a computer for today and whether I would need two computers on my desk at any given time, I would have told you were crazy.
Yeah.
And yet here we are.
Yeah. Like, seriously, I mean, let's see. I built this PC. I bought that ATX board foolishly, like I said, beginning of 2016, I want to say. Yeah. And at the time, I didn't know what I would put in it besides a GPU. And now here I am. I've got a capture card. I've got a 40 gigabit Mellanox network adapter in there. I've got a USB 3 expansion card.
Yep.
You know, also a 3080. You know, like this thing is crammed full. Like every slot is used. So like I didn't envision any of those needs when I bought this board. But here I am using all of them. And that's a good feeling.
Here at the Tech Pod, we use every slot on the motherboard.
That's yes. Like our motto.
You got another another cue.
Milhouse Phoenix writes in, did Richard Branson and Jeff Bezos actually go to space? Who decides that someone has gone to space, and what are the requirements in terms of altitude, etc.?
There's an IEEE standard for space. It's like IATA. It's a science org design, or NASA decides who goes to space.
Wait, what was that other org?
IATA. I can't remember what IATA stands for.
Is that some kind of international standards body? Board?
Yeah, there's an international standards body that determines where space is.
I love standards. I mean, you know, we've gone on record about
consortiums before,
but like, we've
threatened to do episodes about this, and we haven't found the right path to that yet. But
I like keeping track of the standards bodies. You know, you've got your NIST, you've got your ANSI.
Yeah, I love ANSI.
Yes.
So NASA decides. NASA hands out astronaut wings to people when they go to space, basically.
Okay.
And it's I think it was 50 miles for a long time. Like, okay. Like they gave.
Wait, they that's ended it? Up,
hmm?
That's it?
I mean, 50 miles is pretty high, Brad.
I guess. I looked up
250,000 feet.
Right, but I looked up the standard for low Earth orbit before this, and it's like 1,200 miles.
Well, yeah, I mean, but low Earth orbit is low, like leaving is so the question is going to space leaving the atmosphere or most of the, because like theoretically there's a few molecules of atmosphere up where the ISS is, right?
Yeah.
So
I think if you've escaped the atmosphere to any reasonably low density, I think you're probably there anecdotally. Mm-hmm.
Like I feel like, yeah, if you're talking about molecules versus air density, you know, you're leaving the troposphere or whatever, that counts.
Excuse me. Even intergalactic space is not a true vacuum. Thank you. There is technically matter out there. Thank you.
So, let's see, in 2015, I think, hold on. Oh, 2005 rather, NASA gave X-15 pilots who flew they describe it as the radical X-15 rocket plane out of the atmosphere. The X-15 is my favorite of the X-planes, for the record, followed closely by the X-29, the one with the backwards wings. That seems like it was a constant crash risk because the computers weren't fast enough. The X-15 pilots who went above 50 miles got hit the threshold.
Okay.
However, I think that Bezos and Branson's flights were bullshit.
I mean, they were bullshit for a lot of reasons, but go on.
Fair. I don't think, again, 21st century, I don't think suborbital, like in 1950, 1960, sure, suborbital flights, that counts.
That's, to be honest, that's the true reason I took this question, is so we could mock these assholes, stupid billionaires, spent all his money, didn't even reach low Earth orbit.
Didn't even do an orbit.
Right.
Yo, dog, maybe next time orbit the Earth twice, like right. John Glenn did in 1962. Fucking
get John Glenn on the phone.
I think John Glenn is dead, but I can't remember.
Yes, he passed. He passed a short number of years.
Not too long ago, yeah.
A couple, 3 years ago.
Yeah, I met him once in an elevator in the Capitol. Yeah.
Did you really?
I rode in an elevator. I didn't, like, I said, I thanked him for his service and rode in an elevator with him.
He seemed like a fine human being from everything I read about his stances on things.
He shook my hand. So took a moment to say something nice and have a little conversation.
It seemed like a real humanitarian kind of, but we talked about that before though. Like so many of those astronauts came back from those missions with that kind of perspective, right?
A little bit different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who would have thought? Anyway. Has anyone except Apollo astronauts ever exceeded
low Earth?
Yeah.
Not really.
I'm trying to think that there have been no other missions that would have taken anybody out that far, right?
Like there were some shuttle missions that went far, I guess, into low Earth, right?
Yeah.
But like the Hubble's still in low Earth orbit, right?
Right, right.
And like the Hubble servicing mission was, I think, one of the further missions that they did with that. But no, Apollo astronauts are it. It's, except for the people that got, you know, except for the people that got picked up by the others.
Of course. Of course. We don't talk about that though.
I mean, it's they released this. At some point we should talk about the recent spate of UFO activity.
Mm.
Maybe it might be too close.
Yes.
Maybe too close to race dance territory. Anyway,
perhaps. I wonder if we'll see any manned missions anytime soon. Meaning
crewed
like
missions?
10 years. Yes. In the next like 10 years or whatever.
Beyond low Earth orbit?
Yeah.
I mean, they're saying they're going to send people to the moon on the Boondoggle rocket.
Well, I know. That's what I mean, though. They're constantly saying things like that. The follow-through is the thing that's often missing.
I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of senators that really like paying for that stuff so they can keep a lot of jobs in their district. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, next question from Brother Christian. What's your favorite or best flea market find? As a kid in the 90s, flea markets were a regular weekend family event for me. A golden age before everything became collectible, that is, expensive and fake. There was something for everyone. Hunting knives, glass candy dishes, bootlegs, old tech, and older tools for my grandfather to look at. My personal favorite was a guy selling voting machines used in Florida during the 2000 presidential election, hanging Chad demonstration and all.
Wow.
That's not how I expected that question to end. That's... I wonder how much they were. Those things are huge, right? Like you wouldn't.
They're big, yeah.
Like you would want to be devoted to one of those before you decide to take
it. No, isn't that the one that just has the probe that you poke through the punch out holes?
Oh, maybe. Maybe the actual machine is not the whole like stall, I assume, that you step into necessarily.
I always used to look for video games. So the times when I spent the most time in flea markets would have been like the mid to late 80s, probably, like when I was 10 to 15 or 20.
Sure.
Yeah. Maybe early 90s. Yes. And like at that point, you could still find, well, in the beginning of that time period, you would find like Atari 2600 cartridges and old Coleco stuff that I didn't have any way to play.
Sure.
And at toward the end of that time, you would start seeing some NES cartridges.
Ooh.
And NES cartridges. Anytime I saw NES cartridges, I would do a pass.
What kind of prices are we talking here?
Like $2.
Wow.
$1, $2.
Jeez, at that time, that's a hell of a deal.
In the 80s in Bristol, NES stuff was undervalued.
I'm trying to think. Like, we definitely, I definitely also ended up at, you know, shout out to Smiley's Flea Market, but not exactly like big tech hubs.
No.
In that part of the country for me. You did not find a lot of techie stuff there necessarily.
If you wanted a hoe, you could get a hoe. Like the kind that you rake your garden with, not
I always enjoyed looking at the old stereo equipment. Like,
yeah.
I would never actually buy any of it because I'd be too worried it was non-functional.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fun to see a bunch of like 70s brush metal kind of gear.
There was a guy that sold mechanical cash, like mechanical adding machines at Fleener's, which we used to go to. I used to go to with my grandfather. And the Fleener's, his cash registers were strictly do not touch. I mean, his adding machines. You weren't allowed, because you could jam the registers if you push too many buttons at once.
Sure.
I also got a copy of Led Zeppelin 3 on cassette at a flea market one time, which, I mean, just to be clear, good find. That was a good find.
It's not bad. I like, these days, I like coffee mugs.
I have too many coffee mugs.
So do I, but.
You have hangers for your coffee mugs, don't you?
It's a good excuse to get rid of some. Yeah, we do have things to hang mugs on, but we have 30 coffee mugs for two people.
How much coffee are you drinking, Brad?
That's not a lot. Also, I'd say maybe a fifth of those are in frequent rotation.
You
should probably get rid of some of those.
I bought a coffee mug when I went to Disney World in seventh grade, and my mom sent it to me. And when you pick it up, it plays the Mickey Mouse Club theme from the 50s.
Is it mechanical?
It's got a little piezo speaker.
Okay.
And there's like a hidden compartment in the bottom of the mug. So like the mug has a false floor, basically.
Okay.
That comes in the bottom and is glued into place. And it still works 40 years later.
It has a battery.
It apparently has like a battery, like a watch battery or something in there.
Incredible.
It is amazing.
I mean, I know watch batteries last a long time, but geez.
Yeah. I mean, if the watch battery died, I mean, we haven't showed it to my daughter because it will haunt us if we do. But yeah, it was my favorite bug for a long time.
That's pretty cool. I am eternally jealous of your. Have we talked about this? Your Aperture Science 70s mug.
Oh, man.
I had the chance to buy one of those. I bought a bunch of Valve mugs.
Hold on, the brown one or the white one?
The brown one.
Yeah, one's the best mug of all time.
I bought every Portal mug they had except for that one.
Oh, you fucked up, man.
And that's the only one or both of the others have broken at this point. But that's the only one I actually want in this day and age. And it's so long out of production, it's impossible to find.
My TF2 red blue mug has worn out. Like
I bought that one too.
Yeah,
that
like the cool. Colors are worn off of it. I put it in the dishwasher so much.
You can't dishwash those things.
It's a mug, Brad. It deserves to be used. My 60s Aperture Science one is a 50s 60s one. The blue and white one is still strong.
The big giant, like you're working on the Manhattan Project, like just like clog rib on that giant handle.
Like head over to the bun and pour some mud in there.
Yes. I've got that. That one's great. I enjoy that one quite a bit. But
the brown one is perfect for cocoa.
The right size of mug for whatever hot beverage. I every so often I just go out there searching every which way trying to find one of those things.
You should put an email alert up for that. They'll come up.
I've looked and looked and looked, and I just don't think it's possible.
That style of mug is also widely available if you just want the mug without the Aperture Science.
But I really like that 70s sunrise kind of pattern on there. It's
that mug is the kind of mug they had at Waffle House when I was a kid.
Okay, sure.
It's that same shape.
Yes, that's probably, yes, there is a diner-esque quality to it, now that you mentioned it.
It is a 70s diner mug.
And then
the beautiful thing about it is it's exactly the right size for the amount of coffee you can drink before it gets cold.
Yes, exactly.
If it comes out nuclear hot.
That is another reason I want it. Here, yeah, I'm on eBay once again.
It's a good mug.
Search Aperture Science mug. They have like every one ever made except for that one.
So Fitz, friend of the site, friend of the pod Fitz, gave me a mug because he's a potter. Yeah.
We talked about it.
Yeah, he gave me a mug, which that mug replaced the Aperture mug as my favorite mug.
Mm, if you're looking to get rid of that Aperture mug.
I don't know, man. We can maybe come to an arrangement.
We'll discuss a fair price. Can I talk about, I'm sorry, we're not going to get through all these questions. Can I talk about piezo speakers for just a second?
Yeah, of course.
Have we talked about that?
I mean, I think they're interesting. They don't come up that often anymore, it turns out.
It occurred to me, I think it was in the reading the old ass computers channel on the Discord at mm-hmm. one point. It occurred to me that PC speaker headers are still on every motherboard.
Yep.
And nobody does anything with them.
You can still buy a piezo speaker to jam onto those.
At one point, I was like, why don't I just put a speaker in there? And then I can hear that delightful single beep every time the computer successfully posts.
Did you do it yet?
Because not yet. So here's why.
You're going to remember why really quickly.
No, I want that. Like, it doesn't feel the same booting a computer without the beep.
I guess.
I mean, if you really want to get down to it, not that I have a lot of boot trouble, but like you do get the error codes through that speaker that can be helpful.
I have a little screen on my motherboard that's like C7.
I don't have that. So,
and then I go to the internet and it's like, you need to buy a new motherboard because that's what it means every fucking time that I need to look at the error code.
Right. But it's more for the kitschy nostalgia factor than the functional information from error codes thing.
But I played Wolfenstein and Doom with only that speaker.
I thankfully I missed the era of not having a sound card.
Oh, man, it was bad times.
Sound Blaster 16s were ubiquitous by the time we got a computer.
Yeah, I paid $200 for a Sound Blaster, $250 for a Sound Blaster plus a 1X MPC 1.0 capable CD-ROM drive.
Boy.
I'm rolling heavy.
So I was on the verge of buying in fact, not just a piezo speaker. I mean, you can get them in like 10 packs on Amazon for $7. The main thing is everybody complains they're too quiet and tinny and just don't sound good.
No shit.
So here's my.
You're going to plug seven of them into your motherboard?
No, here's my upgrade plan is that my parents don't get rid of a lot of stuff. Well, they're not hoarders. They get rid of plenty of stuff, but like things like old computers end up in the basement.
Yeah.
Because they have a ton of
they turn into new computers down there.
They have a ton of storage space. So things like old computers. Point being, there are at least like two 90s era old PC cases in my parents' basement. Next time I'm out there, I'm going to harvest speakers because those are the legit.
They have a cone.
Those are actual cone speakers. Like yeah. I'm going to get the real ass cone PC speakers out of those things, and then I'm going to.
You can buy those too. I bet.
Think so? Like yeah, the appropriate size.
Yeah, well, the trick with the piezo is you have to stick it onto the computer case someplace so it resonates through the metal of the case.
Right. I want more.
Okay. I support you in all of your endeavors, Brad, but this one's a bad idea.
Maybe you could get a nice little cone speaker on some.
You can I guarantee you can go to AliExpress and buy like 50 of those little cone speakers with the right header.
With the header? I was going to say, I thought you might have to solder the header.
Like you can just put putting the header on is no problem, but you can probably get them with the header. Somebody is using those. They're probably in I know exactly where they are. They're in kids' toys.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go speaker harvesting after this.
Yeah. Go get a VTech kid talk like alphabet box and you'll get all the speakers you need.
Yeah. This is a weird one. I wonder if you have any ideas about this because I sure don't. From Joshington. Deep breath. Can you guys think of a reason why approaching an open flame would cause my phone and Bluetooth headphones to stop playback? It was like something pressed pause every time I approached a small bonfire I had going today while doing some yard work. In case it matters, I had my iPhone 12 in my pocket and was wearing Apple's AirPods Max.
Was it an industrial fire? Was there like heavy metal in the fire?
A small bonfire. Do you have any ideas?
So there's another question that kind of relates to this that's down there.
Okay.
This one's from Braden League. He says, there's a block I walk down somewhat regularly. My AirPods cut out momentarily, seemingly without fail every time I walk down a certain street. What's going on here? Some crazy microwaves, or is it possible there's another Bluetooth device in the area on the same channel?
Oh, let me throw my own question in here.
Yeah. because I know exactly what you're going to ask because it happens to me too.
I bet you do. In the before time when we commuted downtown, waiting at crosswalks, my Bluetooth headphones would cut out all the time.
It's not even at crosswalks. There's a specific intersection. When you come up out of Bart and Muni at Second Market.
Yes, that was one of the chief offenders. It's not the only one. It would happen elsewhere, but that was probably the worst spot for it.
Every Bluetooth headset I've ever had conks out walking out of Muni into the old giant bomb offices at the CBSI building.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would guess either. So, OK. Sometimes radio interference is caused by weird things like a giant iron deposit under the ground.
Okay, sure.
That's the mystery spot down in San Jose. You see the bumper stickers for it. That's always been my assumption is what that is like lodestone or iron or something that's like magnetically active.
Yeah.
I think that the places in the city that do that are because of radio interference. I think that there's probably some sort of radio source there. At like that intersection at Second and Market, that's powerful enough that it's just overrunning. Because the thing about all of the unlicensed spectrum radio stuff, like Bluetooth and Wi-Fi and all that, is it's designed to fail over rather than interfere with the stuff that is actually licensed that operates in the same areas or right. in adjacent spectrum.
Right. If they're trying to collect traffic data or something that is more important than you listening to your podcast.
Yeah. So that's where the watcher pod is. That's where they're watching us.
Yep.
I mean. I would love to know. I once saw a guy who was doing the phone testing. Like if you ever see a guy with like 8 smartphones on a rack, all hooked up to the same antenna and a computer hooked up to them all.
Oh.
They're doing like network testing to see how like looking for dead spots in the network and looking for speeds and stuff like that.
Okay.
I asked him about this because I figured he would know. And he was like, they just tell me to come here and run the machine. So he didn't know. But if you're a radio engineer and you know the answer to this, please send it in to techpod@content.town because I would love to know what the potential causes are.
God, I haven't turned those Bluetooth headphones on in a year and a half at this point.
Well, that's probably great for the battery.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Maybe charge them up to like halfway and see how it goes.
Do you miss any of that? I don't miss like working in an office necessarily, and I don't miss like the annoying parts of commuting, but I miss the bustle and the people watching aspect. Have we talked about that? I may be repeating myself.
No, I liked, like, honestly, as somebody who lives in a house that's always full, I really liked going and getting on a train and having like 40 minutes where I could read a book or, you know, do something with headphones on that was quiet and I knew nobody would bother me except for maybe a stabby homeless guy.
Yeah. I mean, that's not the worst aspect of commuting, at least in a city, is being able to read or something because you don't have to drive. Obviously, people who have to drive, commuting is less fun.
Yeah.
But I mean, for me, it's more the just being out in the world and seeing all these people going to and fro. Like it just feels, I don't know.
So I'm busy. I've started going on more regular walks. I'd done that at the beginning and then I stopped.
Yeah, we do that all the time, but you can only range so far that way.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And
I'm jealous of city walk people. Like you have a lot of different routes where you live.
Yes.
Where I live, I have like 3, maybe 4, but they're pretty much overlap. So they all eventually end up as the same route.
Yeah, we can be in the Presidio in 10 minutes, 15
that's
minutes
very cool.
from here, which is a very nice wooded area. But
yeah, watch out for coyotes.
Yes, the signs are everywhere. There are all these places up there you were not supposed to take dogs because there are coyotes about.
Brad,
yes.
My dad has adopted a fox.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't like live in the house with him or anything weird, but the fox had mange. So he asked a friend who's a vet, and the vet was like, just give him the dog mange stuff. Here's what you give him. And he gave him some, put in a hot dog and throw it out there for him. So now the fox doesn't have mange. And also the fox loves hot dogs and my father.
The fox knows where to get hot dogs.
Yeah, the fox knows what's up. Foxes are cool.
Are they?
If you have chickens, I'm sure you have different feelings about foxes than I do.
Sure.
But like he sends pictures and videos of the fox. He's named it. It comes when he calls.
Wait, what's the fox named?
Fox's name is Zorro.
Zorro,
like the you know sword guy from the Disney Channel.
Yes, no, I'm familiar. Yes,
yeah. Anyway,
okay. Another question, perhaps.
Yeah.
How about?
Should we do that one from Teddy and the Bardo?
Oh gosh, I'm not looking at that one now. I have to find it. There it is.
Okay.
Teddy and the Bardo, opinions on tinned fish such as sardines.
I love a tinned fish.
Do you?
I like smoked oysters, sardines, those anchovy fillets that come in the tins.
Okay.
Love them all. They're delicious.
I will confess half the reason I put this question in here because of the use of the word tinned.
Tinned is,
which is very, very European, which I find delightful. How would we refer to those here?
Tinned fish.
Tinned? Nobody
says
tinned.
That's what my mom always called them.
Yeah, but you have British in your family.
Well, I mean, yeah.
That's what I'm getting at.
I don't canned? Canned?
Canned isn't really right either. I don't know. We just call them sardines, I guess.
Yeah, sardines. I don't like the herring fillets that come in cans. They're gross.
Herring.
They're like little... I don't know that I know
my tinned fishes well enough to tell them apart.
All I know is that like on a winter day, like if we were home for a snow day, especially if the power was out or something, we couldn't really cook or like our cooking was basically putting like stuff on the wood stove and cook. Like we would eat usually like an oatmeal for breakfast or something like that cooked on the stove. And then we would have something cold for lunch, like Vienna sausages and crackers or smoked oysters on saltines.
Jeez,
a lot of crackers.
Fancy lunch.
I don't think the smoked oysters are all that fancy, but I feel like they were probably pretty cheap. And then something warm for dinner, like a stew or something for dinner that was on the stove all day. I like a tinned fish.
What is the shelf life of your average tinned fish, I wonder?
Most preserved food is only good for about 5 years, according to the experts at NASA. When we like even like anything that if you make it shelf stable, it starts to do weird shit after 5 years, which is a real problem for things like Mars missions.
5 years is pretty good for fish, I have to say.
I mean, but think about like you want some fish in space.
No, I'm not going to space. Do I look like a billionaire to you?
I mean, I would. Would you go to Mars?
No, fuck no.
Well, hold on. If NASA was recruiting people, would you go to Mars?
No. Not in under any circumstances.
See, I think I would go if NASA was recruiting people. But if Bezos is recruiting, if Bezos is recruiting people, maybe. Like, he's done some good stuff. Like, the Washington Post, nice work, Bezos. Mm. Keeping that out of the hands of the enemy, that's good. But if Musk was recruiting people to go to Mars, no thank you.
I mean, that's a double no. But I mean, like, my assumption is if you're going to Mars, you're very likely not coming back.
Fair.
I'm not saying that they can't bring people back. I'm saying that the
Yeah, it's probably a one-way trip.
There is, yeah.
You got to buy your ticket back. You got to start earning that ticket back, Brad.
Like the possibility space of things that could go wrong.
I mean,
pretty big.
Yeah.
Pretty big.
But you get to walk on another planet. That seems pretty cool.
I guess the thing for me is like the moon is like what, 3 days away, something like that?
You know, we're actually on the 50th, as we record this, it's the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 15 mission.
Oh.
So Apollo_50th on Twitter is replaying.
I should go check that out.
It's very good. They replay all of the logged communications back and forth.
When they did that for Apollo 11.
They've done it for every Apollo mission.
Like I had that on like constantly on the second monitor. It was so much fun.
Yeah. When that comes up, because like a new thing is happening, it's great. I love it because you get to hear the conversations anyway.
Yeah. The real thing for me is like on a moon mission, errors are potentially recoverable. On a Mars mission, they are most likely not. Like things go wrong on a Mars mission, you are so far gone. Like that's it.
Once you leave low Earth orbit, your recoverability, like your help from the ground is only moral and,
yes,
and
exactly.
Information.
It is very much a go with God from ground control kind of thing.
Like something goes bad on the space station, you get out of the space station, you hit the brakes, like eventually you're gonna come back to ground, right?
Yes.
Something goes bad on the way to the moon. You might make it to the moon. You might just fly off into space.
Maybe you can successfully slingshot your way around.
It worked for Jim Lovell.
Right. But yeah.
Yeah.
What is that? Know. That's a minimum 2 year trip, something like that.
Well, no, the moon's like 3 days.
No, Mars.
Oh, 18 months, I think, is the current thought. Round trip.
Yeah, that's too long.
If all your
tinned fish is spaced accidentally, you're in trouble.
Look, think about it this way. You know, you just grow potatoes in your own poop and dirt. Think about it this way. It's now July, almost August.
Yes.
We entered our houses in March. We could have been almost back from Mars by now.
Mm.
If our houses were a rocket ship.
I suppose.
There's a spaceship. Like those spaceships will be bigger than my house. I can do this.
I mean, I do go outside every few days.
Look, if you go to Mars, can I have your aperture mug?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Glad we've got
this. I'm taking that with me. I'm burying it on Mars with me.
I'm glad. Glad we've got this settled.
This is a win-win, Brad.
Yes. Question from, I apologize. I hope I'm getting your name right. Teixeira, JRT, I think is how you pronounce that.
Uh-huh.
Do you use... Very important question. I almost
it's
left
all
it out.
It's all caps.
It's in caps. It's
so yell it. Well, you shouldn't yell it, but
it's so in all caps that I almost omitted it. Very important question. Do you use shadows under your mouse pointer?
What?
Yes. No. Why?
You can still do that.
So I, when I took this question, I was like, yeah, of course I do. And then I actually looked and apparently I don't.
I haven't had shadows on my mouse pointer in a decade or two, probably.
I thought I did.
Wow, adjust mouse and cursor size. Hold on.
Are you trying to find how to do it? Do you want the drop shadow?
Holy crap, you could do a colored cursor in Windows now?
Wait, what? Where are you looking?
My cursor's green. And you can make a... I'm in mouse pointer.
I want to see that. Wait, which one? There's like four different mouse dialogues in Windows at the moment.
I went to mouse and then I went scrolled all the way to the bottom. And I went to adjust mouse and cursor size.
Okay. Oh, what?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Oh, wow.
I don't think... additional mouse settings at the bottom of that one. No, that's back where it was.
Custom color. I don't see anything about drop shadow here, though. I know where that is. That's in...
Mouse. It's in the mouse control panel.
Yes, that is...
I don't see it there. Oh, enable pointer shadow. Hold on. Apply. What does this look like?
Oh, I see that. Yes, enable pointer shadow. Oh, I can't see it. Now I have a drop shadow. Now I have a drop shadow on the mouse. I'm not sure.
Oh.
I'm not sure which I prefer.
I like it better without. Cleaner, flatter.
Yeah, I do like flat.
I don't need that illusion of height anymore.
I do kind of enjoy flat. I think we've discussed this before. Anytime it's one of my first things in a new Windows install is go turn off all of the window and menu animations.
Really? They just snap out?
Yes. I know I've said this exact thing on this podcast before, but I want every minimize and menu open and any window action to be one frame in length. I want it to happen the second that I input.
This is shocking.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure.
No, I do not use mouse shadows under my mouse pointer.
I thought I did, but I do at the moment. I just turned it on, but we'll see how long it lasts.
My resolution's high enough that I don't know that I would even be able to see it really. I could even really see it when it was on.
Also,
I might change the color, though. That's cool. I didn't think you could do that.
It's not universal. I'm mousing all over the place, like in this Google Doc and Audacity, like any kind of iBeam or like custom cursor does not get the drop shadow.
Yeah, no.
It's just the arrow.
That's the real reason is my experience is once you move off of the hardware accelerated mouse cursor, then shit gets weird in Windows.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why I don't do it.
Yeah. Couple more.
Sure. I got time.
Maxist Views asks, what's a good router to buy nowadays? Should I be looking into the Ubiquiti stuff and locking myself in? I'm someone who likes a nice UI, but I also want things to work very well.
And I just walked this road.
I had got, first of all, we are beyond overdue on the scene drama episode.
Should we just do it about the Ubiquiti stuff?
I mean,
it's like old now.
I'm frustrated that we didn't get it done. We didn't strike when the drama was hot because there was a period where drama was popping off like weekly. And I feel like all that stuff's gotten a little stale. We can still go back and revisit it.
Sometimes it's good to have a cool off period. So I guess you really see the impact of the scene drama.
Like there's Ubiquiti drama. There was PF Sense drama. There was, I had a
Mr.
list.
Mr. Drama.
Yes, there was Mr. stuff.
People got heated about RAM.
Also, I'm not really sure what the scene drama episode is. Is it us reading the angry posts?
I think it's us breaking down the drama of the scene.
Yeah, you gotta explain what happened.
If you have ideas about the scene drama episode that we foolishly mentioned as a reward for hitting 2,000 patrons, and then we blew through that goal almost immediately without having time to think about it, we would welcome them.
It's still going to happen.
In retrospect, for our 3,000 goal... episode, we're gonna think about that one and then suggest something.
Yes, we just need to do the digging. It's not an insurmountable problem, but
I just don't know how to make it interesting because it's just scene drama always makes the problem is scene drama often makes me sad instead of, I liked this podcast to leave people feeling happy.
Yes,
and scene drama is an inherently sad topic.
You don't want to contribute to the problem. You don't want to increase the store of negativity in the world necessarily, but sometimes it is fun to talk about and laugh at things that are outlandish.
Maybe the scene drama episode is getting somebody on who is a noted message board, like scene flamer, and having them read old posts and talk about how that makes them feel now.
Perhaps. Well, the ubiquity drama was not like people sniping at each other. It's an example of corporate malfeasance.
Yeah, no, I got that. So that's a fine thing to talk about, I guess. So
I and a lot of the hardcore network heads on our Discord are of the same mind. Like I'm pretty burned by ubiquity stuff lately, and I'm probably not going to buy any more of their gear.
So what's the TP-Link like prosumer slash home
it's
office?
It's a big conversation, and I feel like we're not going to actually address this person's question well at all. Should we do that first? Like,
so I was literally looking at this the other day because I have an access point and a router in my house. The router is the one provided by the fiber company, and it's fine, but it leaves me a lot to be desired on specifically the port forwarding and loopback stuff.
Yeah.
So I was looking at other routers. In order to replace the router, instead of just doing a what do you call it? The thing where you open up all the ports and just forward it to an IP address. In order to do that and double NAT, I have to get a Ubiquiti or build a pfSense router, it seems like.
Well, this is a big question, and it depends on this person's use case. I will say people like MikroTik a lot as a kind of competitor to Ubiquiti in that sort of prosumer. What do you want to call that?
Like managed network gear space,
SOHO space.
I think Ubiquiti's Ubiquiti is more for like satellite offices, not SOHO. Would be my. Like, if you want to make a network that has a direct tunnel to your home office network, Ubiquiti is a good way to go with that. It seems
sure.
And also IT people can manage switches and access points and all that stuff from wherever they are, not just in the same building.
So they've had a lot of stuff going on. Like there was a big data breach. They like had a lot of user accounts compromised a few months ago, like beginning of the year. And then some of the security researchers in that community, there was like some whistleblowing saying that they in no way disclosed how bad the breach was to their customers and like left people exposed.
That's bad
because they cared more about their share price than protecting their users.
Those people should be fired. The people who made those decisions should be removed.
Yeah. But even before that, like I like the EdgeRouter line a lot. I have an EdgeRouter 4, but they are like that thing is that whole line is on life support or dead at this point. Like they very visibly do not care about those products anymore. They are moving very heavily into the,
like the Dream Machine,
like the Dream Machine. I'm trying to think what you would call that. Like the very sleek, prosumer kind of all in one stuff. Like they're clearly like shifting focus, and the rugged metal box kind of category is a casualty of that. So MikroTik is apparently quite popular in that space. If you're looking for a hardcore router,
okay.
If you
I gotta look and see if they'll do the Mac spoofing that I need to like. Or the Mac forwarding, because the one of the things that Ubiquiti and pfSense do for people who are stuck with a ISP provided router is they'll just say, okay, all the traffic from this ONT goes to this IP address and this MAC address, and then it just basically tunnels those off on their own VLAN.
Yeah.
So that it can work as your router without having to do double NATing or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we probably needed a little more context to answer this question very effectively, because it depends on like if you just have a small home that you want to plug a thing in and never think about it again, you could probably get whatever the current the Archer routers are pretty popular.
I don't know them.
Like the is that a TP-Link?
TP-Link Archer.
Yes, yeah. TP-Link makes those. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, the TP-Link Archer line is pretty popular for being a bang for the buck, decent Wi-Fi router.
I mean, the other thing is if you have a larger house where you typically have Wi-Fi coverage problems, the mesh stuff is really good.
Yes, yes. Do some research on mesh stuff as
The Netgear, a lot of people like the Netgear stuff. Eero is popular, but Amazon bought them, which it makes me immediately suspect. And also, they don't work if the internet goes down, which... Like when you say it like that, it doesn't seem like it's that big a problem, but a lot of people have stuff inside their house that they might want to use even if the internet's down.
Totally. That's terrible. I mean, like if you've got Home Assistant or something like that running, you can't turn your lights on.
I mean, in reality, my power goes out way more than my internet does. So it's less of an issue for me personally, but it's something to be aware of.
Yeah.
I used the Google Mesh stuff until I got fiber, and then the router that I had was too slow. And it's the Google Mesh stuff is great.
Yeah.
So
I think about new routers because I like thinking about new routers, but not because I need one, because
yeah.
This edge router is going to be perfectly fine until I get faster internet, which is probably not going to happen for a while. But
I would hope not for a while.
I mean, the next step is probably a 10 gigabit home connection, which is.
What? I don't even know what I would do with 10 gigabit.
Chattanooga has it. Chattanooga's. I don't know how Tennessee got on the municipal fiber train, but they're.
I have a theory about this.
Chattanooga has public internet. You can get fiber, gigabit fiber in Chattanooga for like $60, or you can get 10 gigabit for $300 a month.
So you know how Tennessee's real long?
Uh-huh.
They have different ISPs and telcos in each part of the state, central, middle, east, west, and middle.
Okay.
So there's not one telco or cable company that had enough like reason to lobby the state to block the municipal broadband.
Interesting.
Efforts.
Oh, that's so depressing. Because
like Sprint owns the east side and Bell was the center. Southwest Bell was the center. Somebody else was all the way on the west side. So, yeah, that's my theory why
depressing.
Tennessee doesn't have, because like they're just to be clear, if you look at the map of Tennessee broadband, there's municipal broadband in like 2/3 of the counties in the state of Tennessee.
I was looking at that.
It's very impressive. But very also jealously. Then you have to live like I lived in Tennessee for 25 years.
I think I know where this is going.
I don't want to live in Tennessee
anymore. I was going to say.
Their legislator has communicated to me very strongly that they do not want my people there.
Yeah.
And I have taken the message.
I figured that's where you were going with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Tennessee.
Okay. Last question comes in from Erica. What is the most useless surplus to requirements 3D print you've ever printed just because you thought it was neat and fun?
Well, like, Brad,
yeah, so
I did a little series for a while there.
I knew you would have some answers for this. I mean, my answers are things that you printed for me, but go ahead.
250 print the mystery weeks worth of print the mystery object, I think.
Okay.
They were all surplus and they were all useless. I don't use a 3D printer on the reg anymore. Mm. I haven't in a long time.
You don't own one, do you?
I have an old like print bot, but like I don't, it is. As far as I know, it's still workable. I haven't tried to fire it up in at least 2 or 3 years. It turns out I don't need a 3D printer. Like I'm not a person who has the right skills to be able to use a 3D printer. But what I do use all the time is the laser cutter.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw you tweeting about fabricating a home repair part with the laser cutter.
So like we replaced our kitchen faucet and we didn't read the specs. So we didn't get the base plate balancer thing, which is basically a sheet of plastic that is an extra foot and a half wider that goes up underneath the faucet, underneath the sink when you have like a thin stainless steel sink so that it doesn't wobble.
Oh, sure.
And nobody had them in stock in town. And I'd already taken the other one off before I realized this. So in order to have a kitchen sink and a dishwasher and an ice maker and water in the fridge, I either would have had to put the old one back on, which is a big pain in the ass.
Okay.
And then wait 3 days for the part to come and then take it off again and like do that whole rigmarole. Or I was like, oh, I bet I can just laser cut this out of plexiglass.
And it was the right thickness and everything?
Well, the plexiglass that I had was half thickness. So I just cut two of them.
Huh.
And then I acrylic cemented them together. So they became one. You know, because acrylic cement just basically melts the plastic until it's one solid piece of plastic. And works great.
All right. That's home repair.
It was not surplus to requirements. It was exactly to requirements.
That's pretty good. That's the dream. Like that's the dream. Having one of any kind of like home fabricating machinery is do something with it that serves a need, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to the little red super meat boy that you 3D printed for me one time, which is like.
This is literally the only time Gina has ever been impressed by a 3D printer
or a
laser cutter. She was like, that's not true. She really likes the kiddo and I make Christmas and birth. Like almost all of our cards are homemade with the laser cutter now.
Okay. That's not bad.
But she was like, that is really cool. You just made this? I was like, well, I mean, I downloaded a file from Thingiverse and then I converted it to work on the cutter. And then I cut it out of the plastic that we had in the garage. She's like, that's really cool. I was like, I think it's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Hey, you made my Mr. kind of half case through laser cutter. That was also cool.
I can make a full case if you want.
It's I like the sandwich.
Didn't I make a Raspberry Pi cutter for you?
That's right. You also made a case for a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, it turns out like it's so the laser cutter is a real easy recommendation if like you have an Etsy shop and you sell like $100 worth of stuff a month because you'll pay for it really quickly. It's a little harder if you don't, but also I regret nothing about buying the laser cutter because it's really fun.
Also, I like the smell of the, I don't know why.
The burning acrylic?
It's, ugh. I don't know why. It's probably not good that I like that.
It's, so the smell that remains on the product afterwards is way less bad than the smell that's when it's happening.
Oh, sure, sure. I don't think I'd want to be in the garage while it was being cut, but when you drop that stuff off, it's like, oh, it's got a kind of a, it's hard to put my finger on. It's a sweet, almost cinnamon-y kind of smell.
It's not, so it vents into the backyard. I feel bad. I try not to do it when people are going to be in their backyards with plastic. The wood smells fine. It just smells like burning wood when you do the wood. My favorite like class of weird 3D prints are those torture tests that people print to see how calibrated their printers are. The classic one is the castle turret with the stairs inside the castle. And it's like, if you have like a SLA printer or something like that, you can print really, really high res so that it looks like a miniature. People who print like Warhammer figurines and stuff like that, or like not specifically Warhammer figurines, but like that size and scale and scope of sculpture are really neat. But yeah, I here's the thing. I'm pretty sure if I had an SLA printer, I would find use for it, but I don't, I have a small house.
SLA printers, extra PCI Express slots, you know.
We got all the acronyms here, dog.
If you've got extra, you'll find a use for it.
I mean, that's true.
Like if you've got, you know, if you got a hammer, you're going to find a nail eventually.
So you're saying I need to get a printer?
Probably.
It's a perfect use of time and money.
Yes.
Speaking of time and money, thank you, as always, to all of the fabulous patrons who support our listener-supported podcast, Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod.
You make this possible.
If you would like to find out how to support the show and get access to the fabulous Tech Pod Discord, you can by going to patreon.com/techpod. And where you will meet like 2,000 other fabulous nerds who probably share a lot of interest with you and probably some things that you've never even considered before and you'll learn a lot from.
Yeah.
Ben, oh my God, somebody, I don't know if you realize this, but somebody in chat this morning, LeMond, asked, hey, what should I have for lunch? And Synapse shared the wheelofLunch.com.
Wheel of lunch.
Wheel of com.lunch. Oh, this is not the one. So Ben Brown from like the finger episode last month made the same product, but tied it to your location. And like it'll pick up, it hits high quality Yelp reviews and looks at your zip code and recommends where you get lunch. And that's how they solved their office, where should we get lunch today problem.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's a good idea. But anyway, there's a lot of interesting stuff happening all the time.
Yeah, I've gone down more rabbit holes than I can think of because of the stuff people talk about on there. I mean,
people helped me solve a batch file programming problem yesterday.
I saw that.
Yeah, it was really incredibly useful.
You know, that Discord is the reason I have a mister. It's a lot of the esoteric computing stuff that I am dabbling with comes straight out of there. It's a very instructive place.
My favorite thing is seeing people use nanotape for all sorts of things that nanotape is absolutely not supposed to be used for.
It's a good test bed for the limits of nanotape.
Yeah, nanotape's pretty good
as well.
But yeah, if you want to support the show, you can by going to patreon.com/techpod. Again, the show's listener supported. We don't take ads. We're not opposed to ads, I guess, but like, you know, like I'd rather take money from people who listen to the show than people who want to sell people who listen to the show stuff.
Sure.
And as always, thank you to our executive producer tier patrons, Andrew Slowski, the Bunny Fiend, Jacob Chappell, Joel Krauska, Twinkle Twinkie, David Allen, James Kamek. Thank you all so much. We really appreciate you. I guess that's it for this week, Brad.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, everyone.
Hey, if people want to send emails in, how can they do that? Do you remember?
Techpod@content.town.
Emails.
We're not anti-email. I just want to reiterate. Absolutely still taking emails. The Q&As are not limited to the Discord. It's just where the queues are these days.
Hold on. Just to be clear, I am 100% anti-email. Just not in the context of messages sent to the Techpod.
Okay. That's a fair distinction.
Yeah. If you want to send it, like, I look at my Gmail account every morning. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I hate email. Email is bad. Outlook is okay, but that's just because nobody has my email address, I guess.
Email is bad, but it's what we've got.
It's where we're at.
Is it time for a new email?
What do you mean?
Like, should somebody just design 3.0? An entirely new successor standard to email?
Look, what if email, but on the blockchain?
So oh, God.
Couldn't spam you, Brad.
Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.